Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Hello, good evening to you. This is Love Sport and your Wimbledon fan show. I'm Alex Crook. Nick Draper from the 9 Years podcast is with me in the studio. We will, of course, be reacting on that 0-0 draw against Oxford yesterday, which leaves the Dons in 21st position in the League One table, 1 point behind Rochdale, 2 behind Scunthorpe, still very congested down the foot of League One. And of course, a huge Easter weekend doubleheader to come. We'll also be reacting to events in Augusta, where Tiger Woods has won his 5th green jacket, the 15th major title of his career. He won it by a shot in the end ahead of a cluster of players, actually, who finished a shot behind the lead. Those included Dustin Johnson, the world number 2. We've got some quotes here from Tiger Woods. 11 years, remember, since he won his last major championship. Ridden off in many quarters. He says, I'm a little hoarse from yelling. I was just trying to plod my way around all day. All of a sudden, I had the lead coming up to 18. I was just trying to make a 5 when I tapped in. I don't know what I did. I know I screamed to have my kids there. It's come full circle. My dad was here in 1997, and now I'm the dad with 2 kids there. Of course, the win for Woods came after a collapse from Francesco Molinari, the overnight leader, not once but twice finding the water today to end his hopes of adding the Masters to the Open Championship that, of course, Molinari, the Italian, won last year. You a golf fan, Nick?
I'm going to say nothing. Don't ask me any questions about golf. You will get very little from me, I'm afraid.
Incredible.
And I will bite my tongue about it as well for the time being.
We had the guys from the Watford fan show on and they didn't like golf either. You're missing out.
Oh, hold on. If Watford didn't like it, Watford don't like golf?
No.
Oh, I love golf then. I'm going to become a massive golf fan now just because they don't like it. I cannot have anything in common with... No.
There you go. Nick Draper from the 9 Years podcast is here. Oxford 0, Wimbledon 0 was how it finished at the Kassam Stadium. Was it just a case of the end of digging in for a draw after a below-par performance?
Absolutely, yes. A below-par performance in terms of with the ball. Without the ball, not too bad. We were just forced back. The ball kept coming back at us. Oxford had all the possession. We dropped deeper and deeper as the game... Well, not as the game we were on. Certainly as the first half wore on. Second half, probably very similar, actually. But, in the end, a few good saves from Aaron Ramsdale. Definitely going to be our player of the year, I would imagine. Probably cemented it yesterday. One save he made perhaps was a worse miss than it was a great save. But that said, yeah, hey, look, when you're not playing well, you can still pick up a point. I think that's a hugely positive sign. And I think when you look at the teams down at the bottom of the table with us, your Walsalls, your Southends, your Scunthorpes, had they been at Oxford yesterday, had they been involved in that game, they wouldn't have come out with a point yesterday.
And it extends your run. I mean, if you look at the league table now, there's a lot of red down there. Bradford, who are gone, aren't they, in all honesty? Yes. They've lost their last 5. So have Walsall.
Yeah.
4 defeats in 5 for Southend. I was hearing the Wickham midfielder, Marcus Bean, this morning saying they look like a team who are in big trouble on their way down. Mm-hmm. Rochdale just above you, 2 defeats in 5. Scunny have lost 4 in 5. Plymouth, 3 in 5. Wickham needed that win yesterday. I think it was no wins in 11 for them before yesterday. So you've got more green and more grey than anybody else. 1 defeat in 5 matches. So that suggests that of those teams down there, you are the one in form.
Yeah, I think we're 1 defeat in 8. I think it's something like 2 defeats in 10. It's the only frustration is because we were so poor for such a long time, we have been probably the best team in terms of form at the bottom, probably since the turn of the year, if we're being honest. But we were in such poor form that we've had such a mountain to climb that every week it seems to be, if we pick something up, if we pick a win up, we're still not getting above that dotted line, as it were, across the with the bottom 4. So that's the frustration, and it's just the fact that with what we've got, four to go,
Yep, four matches to go. Everybody pretty much in the everybody in the bottom half has got four matches to go. There's a few in the top half who've got games in hand.
Yeah, so you just want to be, because you're the ones in the despite the fact the form, and you've got Scunthorpe and I know Southend have dropped, but Scunthorpe in particular, who are in terrible form. You on as if this form continues, then yes, Southend, Walsall, and Scunthorpe should all go down if this form continues. But at the moment, we are still in the bottom four, so as it stands, it's not really in our hands, because if we lose the next four, we're down.
No shots on target at the Cas Sam. Is that a concern? Has to be, doesn't it?
Yes and no. I think it's the second time in the last couple of months we've had this away from home. Shrewsbury was the same. We didn't have a shot on target. And we got a 0-0 draw there as well. It's nerves and pressure. I think that comes with a young team. I think that comes with defending for long spells, that when we did get the ball, because we had barely any possession yesterday. We had no long spells of possession whatsoever. I think when we get the ball, we're looking to try and make something happen, because we're nervous and we want something. We want every pass to try and be a killer pass or whatever it was. It just didn't happen. We were so poor with the ball yesterday. It was really, really poor, in fact. But as I say, look, we still ground out a point. And yes, Aaron Ramsdale's had to come in and make a couple of really good saves. But in general, how many times did Oxford get in behind? Considering the amount of possession they had, considering the fact that we were hemmed back for so long, not that often. So I think we can be. I don't think we're too worried about that.
Thoughts turning to next season, is Ramsdale a player that you would like to keep?
So our fans were singing yesterday, Aaron Ramsdale, we want you to stay. But our fans, I think, unfortunately, and they will know it as well, are living an absolute dream world. There's absolutely no chance whatsoever of us having Aaron Ramsdale next season. I think it's a George Long situation all over again from last season. Now, I imagine, I don't know what's going to happen with Ramsdale, but I imagine that if he's going to go out on loan again next season, it will be to a higher level side, probably Championship. And yeah, there's just, and yeah, we're not getting Ramsdale, unfortunately. As much as I would love him, and we all love him, he's come in and he's just a Wimbledon player from day one. From the first moment he landed with us, you thought, we took to him straight away, he took to us straight away. Very similar situations to George Long last season, in fact. Yeah, we'll be gutted not to have him next season, but it's just not going to happen.
The tributes are continuing to roll in for Tiger Woods on the back of his amazing victory at the Masters earlier in the day. Matt Fitzpatrick, the English golfer, says, wow, no words to describe watching that on TV. Just an amazing comeback from Tiger. Brooks Koepka, who was one of those players who finished a shot back in second place on Tiger Woods. I think 18's a whole lot closer than people think. That's in relation to Tiger Woods equaling Jack Nicklaus's record of 18 major championships. He's on 15 now, his fifth green jacket, as we've been saying, and we will keep the tributes coming between now and 9 o'clock. You are listening to the Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter, or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
One of the hardest I think I've ever had to win, just because of what has transpired the last couple of years of trying to come back and play.
Tiger Woods there reacting to his amazing victory at the Masters over in Augusta, the 15th major championship, 11 years since he won his last. And as I say, we will be reacting to that throughout the evening here on Love Sport. What a story that is. What a story it would be if AFC Wimbledon, they looked dead and buried not that long ago, could also mount a Tiger Woods-esque comeback and survive in League One. They drew 0-0 against Oxford, of course, yesterday. We've already discussed Aaron Ramsdale, who in Nick's eyes was the clear Don's man of the match. Anybody else who stood out for you?
Steve Seddon tends to normally as well. Another loanee we've got in from Birmingham, left wing back, just puts in an immense shift, just so much energy and so much work rate. Like I said, in possession yesterday was not the best game for us, but he was the one that you felt that was trying at times to try and get forward when he could and try and make things happen. It just didn't happen yesterday.
One of the things that stood out for me, only six subs named, not that unusual in the lower divisions, but no Kwezi Appiah.
Oh, Kwezi Appiah. I don't know what to say about Kwezi Appiah. It's a sad situation. So we got a very talented player who was hailed as championship level quality when we signed him. He is very, very good. He is very, very talented. He can't stay fit. He can't stay uninjured. He's just come back after an injury having then played for Ghana, which was an unfortunate, messy situation before he came back to play for us. And now we're hearing that he did not train Friday. We don't know why he didn't train Friday, but our manager, apparently, these are all rumours. I've not had these confirmed. I don't have a confirmation from a source inside the club to tell me this for 100%, but we understand that there's been a bit of a falling out of sorts there, so I'm not sure whether we'll see Kwezi again play for us.
Is that a big blow in terms of your survival hopes?
Well, talented player, but didn't play enough. That's simple. I mean, that's the nature of it. As much as I like Kwezi as an individual, as a person. I think he's a really top guy. I think we had him on loan a few years ago when we were in League Two, and he was outstanding. I was really pleased when we got him back. But it's the injuries, unfortunately. It sounds harsh. If I could magic the injuries out of him somehow, then I would have him starting every single game. But it's just not going to happen. It's the real world we live in. And unfortunately, if you can't get the game time out of him, then you can't justify the expenditure on his wages, and you have to look elsewhere.
Now, let us know if you at home have got a view on that. You can give us a call in the studio. 0208 7020 558 is the number to call. We're available on Twitter at Love Sport Radio. And in terms of coming up now, it's a crucial period, isn't it? The Easter period. You play Good Friday and Easter Monday?
We play Good Friday and then Tuesday night because of Luton having their game, their Easter Friday game. Easter Friday. Good Friday, which, you know, well, you can debate how good it normally is for us. But, they've moved the game. They've got a game on Saturday, so therefore we've moved to Tuesday night. But still, two games in 5 days for us. Bristol Rovers at home next week is such a winnable game. They won yesterday. I think that will be them safe now.
Yeah, 5 points clear of the drop zone now, Bristol Rovers. 49 points, 50 usually is the safety mark, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think they'll be absolutely fine. It's just whether they want to come to us on Friday and say, look, let's just get this win that absolutely 100% guarantees it, and if they want to go all out for it, just so they can get it sorted, done, dusted as quickly as possible. But I think from our perspective, that's exactly the sort of game you want to have at this time. Team down there, not great, probably just enough safe. So we're the ones that need the result more than they do, and tend to find that the teams that need the result end up getting it.
Yeah, we'll be talking about Bristol Rovers in much more detail later in the programme. Luton, as you mentioned, next Tuesday night. Their 28-match unbeaten run was ended this weekend by Charlton. Actually, it's incredible, given the run that they've been on. They're only 5 points clear now of Barnsley. I say only. I mean, that's a relatively comfortable gap. But if they were to lose at Wimbledon, then those clubs behind, because Sunderland and Portsmouth have both got games in hand. Charlton are in great form as well. Mm-hmm. It's so tight in that top five. They could suddenly find themselves under pressure.
Yeah, I've been looking at this all season. Obviously, Luton are my second club, as they are everyone's second club, I think. But they're not safe yet by any stretch of the imagination. And I think a lot of us were sort of hoping that by the time we went there, they would have the league or at least promotion sewn up and then perhaps take their eyes off the ball a little bit. But no, it's not going to be the case at all. It's going to go down to the last couple of games for them as well. It's a hell of a tight situation up the top now. We've looked at the bottom of the league and everyone's talked about this bottom half battle royal for staying up. But actually, Charlton and Portsmouth have come back into form as well after a massive dip. And all of a sudden, you've got five teams, and conceivably, any two of those five could end up as the top two. So, unfortunately, it does mean that it's... I suppose it's good and bad, because Luton play Accrington. I don't know if Accrington are still going to be in the mix, but they're not out of it just yet. So they play them on Saturday, so they can take points off Accrington. And then, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But let's just say none of us are anticipating anything from that game with Luton.
Do you have a preference if you could pick two? Obviously, Luton, you've already said. If you could pick two to go up, one automatically, one via the playoffs from that top six, who would it be?
Probably, this will be controversial, I would probably pick Charlton. Now, I know there's lots of issues with their owner and stuff like that. People aren't happy with that and what have you. But I don't know the ins and outs of the situation with the owner, if I'm being honest. It seems to be a lot worse a couple of seasons ago. But at the moment, there seems to be investment there. Things seem to be running fairly smoothly for them at the moment. They've got Lee Bowyer as manager, who's a club legend. I think that's always a good sign. If you've got a club and you've got a legend at your club that wants to be manager and is prepared to work for whoever owns the club at that point in time, then I think that's a good sign. I think he thinks that he can put trust and faith in the people that run the club, because he will know the club better than most, Lee Bowyer. So as a club, I do like Charlton, and I've no ill will against Sunderland, for example. No problem at all if Sunderland go up, but I can't. Yeah, plus Lar Taylor's there, and of course here on the 9 Years podcast we are officially Lar Taylor's fanboy radio station, so of course I want them to do well, and I would love to do well. But as long as Luton go up, I don't really Barnsley, I've got nothing against Barnsley, they can stay up. But Barnsley sort of yo-yo, don't they? They're just sort of that yo-yo team between Championship and League One. You're kind of like, eh. If they go up, they're just going to come straight back down, I'd imagine. So not
what
too
What about
bothered.
Portsmouth? Is there an affiliation there? Because they've not been on quite the same journey as you, but they were very close to going out of existence before the fans saved them at the 11th hour.
They were. They were another club that I have a bit of sympathy with because they fell victim to the Harry Redknapp School of Management. Financial management, that is. I've no real love for Portsmouth, if I'm being honest with you. Hey, if we stay up and they go up, at least we don't have to go the next season because it's not the most pleasant of away trips, Portsmouth, I'm afraid.
It used to be even worse. They didn't have a roof on the away end for a long time.
They did not have a roof on the away end. This is very true. I don't know how that away end ever coped. We were talking about this yesterday. Charlton, funny enough, Charlton was another one. How did these away ends, for those that have been to Charlton, the Valley and to Fratton Park, how did they cope when they were in the Premier League?
Pompey played AC Milan there in the
Europa
League.
They did, in the Europa League. They had Ronaldinho down there. How? I don't know how they could, those away-ends, physically manage without any issues whatsoever. They're tiny, there's no room to move, they are health hazard. I don't know how it worked, but hey, fair play, they managed it for however many seasons. But yeah, if I'm being honest, as long as we stay up in Luton Cop, I'm not fussed what else happens.
Matt has tweeted, at Love Sport Radio, what happened to Bartram is his question.
So there's Bartram, there's Tom Saws, there's Jake Jervis, there's Tyler Garrett. We have no idea what's going on with these players. They're all fit. They're all healthy. They're not in squad. Tenai Watson, again, I get Garrett and Watson are loanees, of course. They're players that Wally has obviously looked at and thought, not for me, not included in them, not getting game time. Bartram played about a month ago, I think. Stu, my co-presenter on the 9 Years podcast, was telling me yesterday about, reminding me yesterday that Bartram actually played fairly recently. I think it was Doncaster we came to realise it was the Doncaster game where Bartram played, and we've not seen him since. Just doesn't seem to fit into either the formation. It's the same with Mitch Pinnock. Mitch Pinnock, we've talked about, not starting games, not really get. He came on late, very late yesterday, 89th minute, I think. Players that don't fit maybe the system that Wally wants to play, players that don't offer Wally something that he's looking for, whatever it is. But yeah, those senior players, Bartram, Saws, will go, we imagine, in the summer. Jervis is alone, he'll go. Same with Watson, same with Garrett, who... Oh, Garrett. Ketel Waller was a player we had under Egil Olsen many years ago. 99, 2000, perhaps, when we got relegated from the Premier League. No one has yet verified that he actually existed. No one's seen him. No one knows if this was actually, if this was some sort of tax dodge with Ketel Waller, because no one ever saw him. No one saw him sign a contract. No one.
What happens when you Google his name?
Nothing happens. Your computer shuts down. There's a big siren and it just shuts down. And then some have been known to explode. So I don't know what happened with him. But Tyler Garrett, apart from the fact I think he actually has an assist to his name this season away at Wickham, if that hadn't have happened, I'd be asking serious questions about what or who Tyler Garrett actually was. It was like a Tyler Durden situation or a, you know what I mean, like a Kaiser Soze perhaps, I don't know. But yeah, they're not going to be here next season anyway. All those players I've just mentioned, apart from Pinnock, not here next season.
21 minutes past eight on this Sunday evening, the day Tiger Woods has won the Masters for the fifth time at Augusta. You're listening to the Wimbledon Fan Show with me, Alex Crook, and Nick Draper from the 9 Years podcast.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Welcome back to the Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. On the day Tiger Woods has won the Masters, it's overwhelming just because I was very lucky just to be playing again, said Tiger Woods after being given the famous green jacket. All the previous champions' dinners, I was really struggling and missed a couple of years playing in this great tournament. Now to be champion with 22 years between the wins. My mum was here and she was here in 97 as well. He says, I'm lost for words. My dad shouldn't have been here in 97. Because he was recovering from surgery, and now my little boy Charlie. The embrace is just special, and yeah, Tiger Woods there reacting to winning his 15th major championship, the oldest winner of the Masters since Jack Nicklaus over in Augusta. He finished a shot clear of the field. This is the Wimbledon Fan Show. Nick Draper from the 9 Years podcast is with me. Do keep your calls coming. 0208 70 20 558. 0208 70 20 558 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. I think we've got Stephen, who is a Wimbledon fan, on the line now. In fact, we can hear from Stephen in just a moment. We mentioned Bradford there. Are they down for you? Is it three places that you're playing for?
Yeah, Bradford have gone. Bradford have gone. Yeah, paying the price for an awful summer. So, yeah, they can't seem to get it. And now, I don't know what's happening. They've got their third manager of the season, has it now? I don't know. I can't even remember who's in charge right now. Yeah, they've gone. They've gone. Sad situation for them. But I think they've got enough about them to rebuild in the summer and come back up pretty sharpish.
I think we can hear from Stephen now, the Wimbledon fan. Evening, Stephen. Stephen, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport.
Right, yes. Sorry, there's technical stuff. Anyway. Wimbledon, where do I start?
Go on.
Ooh.
Anywhere's good. Anywhere's a good starting place.
It was frustrating yesterday, I'd say.
Yeah.
But it's certainly a point gain instead of 2 points drop, like a lot of people have been making out, because Oxford was a tough place to go. Mm-hmm. There's no lying about it. There's no, you know, sugarcoating it. It is really tough to go there and get anything out of it.
Yeah.
So to come away with the point, and we moved up a place as well, which is brilliant. Mm-hmm. All thanks to Akinfenwa as well, may I say. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think when you consider as well our record at Oxford, what is it? One win in something like, how many visits now? Eight visits?
Oh, yeah, bogey team.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were on form. They hadn't lost in five. They were... And you look at their squad, and I think we haven't spoken about this, they have got so much quality in there. I don't know why they were struggling for so long. I don't know if they had loads of injuries or their manager was perhaps struggling to get them playing the way he wanted them to or whatever it was, but...
Well, let's be honest, it's Carl Robinson. Of course, he's going to struggle.
He will struggle. But you look at the subs they made yesterday. I was saying yesterday, they brought on another player I'm not particularly a big fan of, but they brought on Jamie Mackie came on. And who else they come on?
He's a hard-working player, but I barely saw anything of him.
No, not yesterday. No, I agree with you. He does score goals at this level. James Henry as well, I think, is an excellent player at this level. And they came on and they replaced, number three, Garbutt, was it? And Sinclair, the centre forward, who I was really impressed with, both of those players.
Yeah, I don't know how they've got him.
No, but that's the quality they had, and so I think that puts that point yesterday into perspective, really, because they've obviously got a big budget and they've got a bigger squad than we have. So definitely a point gain, not 2 points lost, like you say.
Yeah, it was almost the opposite of that last week against Accrington, where we should have really won. Mm. Let's be honest. Yeah, we were poor. Yeah, we didn't finish chances, but the goal... Anyway, I won't go over last week because last week was reviewed last week.
What did you think of the midfield yesterday, can I ask you? Because this is something we were going to discuss, was the three in midfield. Do you think they are the right three going forward for the rest of the season? Because I wasn't too sure yesterday.
I don't like... I've not liked Wagstaff since the West Ham game that midfield. He just... I don't know what he brings.
Mm.
The guy in front of me yesterday was sort of ranting on about how when we were on the counter attack, there was no options going forward.
Yep.
Wagstaff was really our only option going forward because he's got pace.
Mm.
No one else in that team has really got any speed to them, let's be honest, apart from the wing backs who are bombing up and down the field all day. But I don't really see what Wagstaff brings. Wordsworth. He's Wordsworth. I mean, people surely must have seen enough of some of his quality, you know, this season to sort of say, well, his position is justified. And I mean, Hartigan, he's amazing for sort of the age he is at. I know I don't want to say this, but sort of the club we are so low down on the budget scale and whatnot. How he's still giving it all when clearly he's got talent to be a much better club. You know, his position is justified as well. It's just Wagstaff, I can't really see what he brings. I liked the subs when McLaughlin come on, but he's not been the same sort of player, say, about 2-3 weeks ago when he was sort of looking energetic. I mean, yesterday he didn't get a touch for about 5 minutes, I think, when he came on.
Yeah, I've got a bit. I agree with you. I think McLaughlin, I really like because of that energy he's brought to the team beforehand. I don't know what's happened. I don't know if it's a fitness thing. Perhaps he came to us not 100% fit, and he's feeling it now. I don't know. Same with Dylan Connolly, who's just these are two players that aren't getting.
And it's the same with Felivi as well.
And Felivi as well is just not getting game time. And I don't know if it is just a fitness thing or can't last 90 minutes.
It must be, surely.
And that's why Wagstaff maybe gets in. But
yeah.
Great stuff, Stephen. Thanks for your call tonight.
That's okay.
Anybody else want to get in touch, you can do so. 0208 7020 at 558 on the phones. You can tweet us as well, at Love Sport Radio. Nick Draper from the 9 Years podcast is in the studio, and we're going to be looking at the run-in for the teams down at the bottom of League One when we come back.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
It's just unreal for me to experience this. I mean, my mom was here. She was there in 97 as well. And so I just couldn't be more happy and more excited. And, you know, I'm kind of at a loss for words, really.
Tiger Woods speaking to Sky Sports after coming out on top in the battle for the famous green jacket over in Augusta, the Masters champion for the fifth time in his career. It's also his 15th major title. He finished one shot clear of the cluster of players, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka and Xander Schauffele. The Americans dominate the final leaderboard. Francesco Molinari, who was the overnight leader, ended up two shots behind Tiger Woods in a tie for fifth alongside Australia's Jason Day, Webb Simpson, Tony Finau of the States, and then John Rahm, the only other European in the top 10 alongside Ricky Fowler and Patrick Cantlay, both three shots behind Woods, the champion. We will continue to react to that throughout the course of the evening here on Love Sport, but this is the Wimbledon Fan Show with me, Alex Crook. Nick Draper from the 9 Years podcast is my studio guest this evening. Wimbledon in 21st place in the League One table, 44 points from there, 42 matches, a point ahead of Southend, two ahead of Walsall, then come Rochdale just above the relegation places on 45. Same for Scunthorpe, Plymouth and Wickham, both on 47. Accrington Stanley, how they needed a victory. They got it this weekend. They're on to 48 points. They were the team probably bottom of the form table since the turn of the year. Are they safe now on 48? Are Gillingham safe on 48?
Yeah, I've seen people on Twitter asking about points. What do you think points needed for survival? I think we will need still, to be 100% certain, 50.
Two wins from four games.
I think 49 could do it, actually. And what helps is our goal difference is just slightly better than Scunthorpe. I think we'll finish above Scunthorpe. If they were to get 49 points, I think we'd finish above them on goal difference. If we got 49, that should keep us up. But as far as Accrington go, 48 points, just another one. Get to 50 and then, yeah, I think 50 guarantees you this season, I think.
And you will have dissected the run-ins, no doubt, of all your relegation rivals. Who's got the easiest run-in, for want of a better word?
I guess when you consider we're playing Bristol Rovers and Wickham, you can't really say us, but there are so many games. I think, is it Wickham especially? They've got Rochdale on Friday, then they've got Walsall, they've got us. That's an incredible run of three games to have. I think everyone down, no one's really got a particularly easy run-in at all from the ones down there. But looking at it, as I say, so many teams playing against each other still, even though there's only four games to go, teams taking points off each other. That's why it will be quite low, I think. I think the points tally need to stay up will be quite low. The only thing about, just as you say, dissecting it in terms of fixtures and results and stuff is you try and be as unbiased and as balanced as you can be doing it, but it's impossible. I think we spoke this week about other teams' fixtures going in. I think we said that Bradford will lose every single game they play for the rest of the season except for Scunthorpe, who they'll beat, and therefore we'll finish above Scunthorpe. It's like, realistically, is that likely? So I don't know.
Will Haynes has tweeted at Love Sport Radio, did Wally make the right substitutions yesterday, bringing off Piggott when Hansen looked shattered and leaving his final sub until 2 minutes before the end? Both McLaughlin and Connolly made minimal impact too.
I don't think we changed shape. I think that's the thing. When Connolly normally comes on, or he has done in the last few weeks, we've sort of switched and gone three up top with Connolly, Hansen and Piggott. And yesterday we took Piggott off for Connolly and tried to be having a front two, Hansen and Connolly, and using Connolly's pace, I guess Hansen trying to hold the ball up. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what would have worked yesterday, if I'm being honest with you. I think Connolly is always the right to bring on because his pace, and it always gives you a chance of this pace, but we just were so poor in possession, we just could not get the ball to him. We tried to get him in behind at times, it didn't work because our retention of the ball was so poor. Hansen at least does hold it up when the ball gets played into him, but again, yes, I agree, tired. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Is there thought given to Piggott, who took a couple of whacks yesterday as well? Was that part of the reason why he was taken off? Because he did take a couple of... he did take a couple of thumps, actually, one to the head as well. So that might have played a part in it too. McLaughlin coming on, a bit of energy in midfield, I guess, was the reasoning. And Hartigan, again, not his best game yesterday. So I'm not really going to look too much at the subs. maybe a formation change is what we needed, but we kept out. We kept the clean sheet. We got the point. So in the end, happy days.
I wanted to ask you about another interesting story from your division. It happened in the Barnsley Fleetwood match. Barnsley winning by 4-2, but there was an incredible flashpoint afterwards. Joey Barton, the Fleetwood manager, was actually prevented by police from leaving the stadium.
It was great.
After an alleged altercation in the tunnel between him and the Barnsley manager. Barton's meltdown came as his Fleetwood side crumbled at Barnsley, leaking goals and being reduced to 10 men. They were 2-0 down after just over half an hour. Chet Evans scored from a corner in the 64th minute to bring them back in the game. But a minute later, Barton's hopes had turned to frustration as Harry Souter was sent off for an elbow on Cameron McGee, and the former Luton player Mike Barre sealed the win. They left Barnsley 5 points from the top of League One and left Joey Barton, well, certainly far from happy. Fleetwood in 11th. Not really in danger of going down, no chance of making the playoffs, but as we know from his previous career, it doesn't take much for Joey Barton to lose his rag, does it? I mean, if he is proved to have assaulted the Barnsley manager, Stendhal, should that be the end of his Fleetwood career? Should that be the end of his managerial career?
You'll probably find... Well, never say never, of course. It's going to be very difficult to come back once you assault another, if he has... If he has assaulted another manager of another football club. I mean...
Have you ever seen anything like that? I mean, even in your non-league days, when perhaps these type of incidents may be more common.
Yeah, perhaps we saw some of that at the very low levels. Yes, a little bit, but those are all very much behind closed doors and you didn't have TV cameras and all the and national press at every game like you do at our level, so it probably flew under the radar. I think there were a couple of instances that I won't. Perhaps best not discuss, but not at this level. No, it's ridiculous. And Joey Barton, I don't know. I do enjoy the fact that I shouldn't say this, but
a little bit. Normally, if you start a sentence with "I shouldn't say it," you probably shouldn't say it.
No, I know, but you know, not because I don't want to be seen to be advocating this. Of course, lest my words be misconstrued. Bit of WWE in football, you know, the clip afterwards of the police coming and stopping him. It was all very dramatic. It's like you're in a soap opera or you're on an episode of Monday Night Raw or something. You've got to love a bit of that drama. But Joe Barton, no, you shouldn't be. Obviously, it goes without saying, you don't even have to say it. Shouldn't be getting involved in all these sorts of things. Like you say, Fleetwood have got nothing to play for. So what got under his skin yesterday, I don't know. It's repeated. You have to worry about individuals when they repetitive behaviours or repeated behaviours that Joe Barton has throughout his career, like you mentioned. Something else is going on there with him.
Have you read his book?
I've not read his book, no.
It's a fascinating read about his background and some of the issues in his family life.
Yeah, well, then clearly he needs some more help. I mean, I imagine he's had some help in those areas during his career, but obviously he needs a little bit more. I mean, it's
do you think anger management would be a good thing in football? Because I mean, we saw Neil Warnock lose his rag, didn't we? Stand on the pitch and stare at the referee like a madman after Cardiff had succumbed to that 2-1 defeat against Chelsea. I mean, football management is not good for your blood pressure, is it?
It's not. It's such a high-pressure thing. Even, like you said, with Fleetwood yesterday in a game that there's nothing riding on it for them, it obviously has got under their players. It's not just the manager in that instance, by the sounds of it. Their players have also lost the plot a little bit. But also, I think perhaps we have to look at football in general and think about, really... Why is it should not be causing people this amount of pressure and stress. It really shouldn't. At the end of the day, we have to get some perspective involved here. It's not life and death. That quote is ridiculous. And it's going to make it makes people unwell. It really does. And you can see it. And the pressure, especially, I mean, talk about Neil Warnock in that situation there. You've also got referees. And who'd be a referee right now, to be honest with you, in this day and age? Like the pressure and they must be under every single time they go out there. They've got basically, they referees go out, especially in the Premier League, they go out in front of 20,000 people every single week, except from the Vicarage Road, and it's probably about a quarter of that. But no, they go every week.
You don't like Watford, do you?
Not a big Watford fan. all eyes are on them. All of them, everyone in the stadium is just waiting for you to either make a mistake, or they're judging every single decision you make, or they're just waiting to give you abuse. I'm thinking, why would you do it? And that can't be good for them either.
Speaking of managers losing their rags, you've put on the running order here. Carl Robinson confronting the Wimbledon kit man at full time. You weren't happy with Carl Robinson.
We're never happy with. I can't even say his name. I don't even want to say his name. I don't want to give the man any oxygen of publicity whatsoever. But he brings it on himself. Now, obviously, there is history with this manager with us because of his connections with Milton Keynes. Yes. And he said things in the past which are somewhat antagonistic. So he keeps on making out that he's the victim at all times. He's making out he's the victim in this situation, which is not true.
You're not having that.
He gives it as good as he's got it, I tell you. And part of me thinks he actually enjoys it. Now, I don't know what sort of person in the situation yesterday. So what's happened yesterday is apparently, allegedly, our kitman, Robin Bedford, volunteer kitman, may I add, doesn't get paid to do this. He does this because he loves the club. He's been doing it for how many years now? I don't know. 10, 15 years he's been doing it, Robin. Travels up and down the country. Ridiculous drives he has to do. Ridiculous hours he has to put in for free. He is an absolute legend, Robin, right? And he's a Wimbledon fan. That's why he does it. Didn't shake Carl Robinson's hand, apparently. Now, if I was in the situation that Robin was in, I would not shake Carl Robinson's hand. They've had to go to Milton Keynes and go behind the scenes at Milton Keynes. I wouldn't be looking at anyone. I would not be shaking anyone's hand. I had to do it once when I had to go into the press area for a game we played there in the Johnson's Paints Trophy back in the day when that competition was something that was worthwhile. And I hated every single second that I was behind the scenes in that area because I had to interact with people from that football club and I just didn't want to do it. I didn't shake hands with anyone, didn't say a word to anyone, just wanted to be out of there. Carl Robinson is exactly the same. Doesn't matter which club he's with, I do not want to engage with that man. I would ignore him. If I was exactly what Robin did yesterday, I wouldn't go. If I saw Carl Robinson out in the street, I'm not going to approach him or go anywhere near him. I'm just going to pretend that he does not exist. And I think that's what Robin has done yesterday. Carl Robinson can't let that go, and he has to make a scene. Now, I don't know what sort of person would then stay out. What happened is the match officials, they've gone. They've gone off the pitch. They've gone into the changing rooms at the end of the game. His own squad have gone off the pitch into the changing rooms, forgotten about it. He has decided to wait pitch side for all of our players who have gone over to applaud our fans. 1,300 of us yesterday there, which is a fantastic turnout.
Yeah, it really is.
All our players and all our squad came over to give us a massive round of applause. Really great moment for everyone connected with our club. He waited for the duration of that just so he could confront Robin about not shaking his hands. Now, that to me is an individual that's really got issues.
Yeah, a little bit unhinged, right?
A little bit. He really has. Perhaps we get under his skin because of things that have happened in the past. I don't know. I know that our fans love giving him grief at games and sing songs about him. Fair enough. It's maybe at times a bit pantomime, you could argue, but hey. But I don't know what goes through his mind that thinks he's going to confront a volunteer kitman about someone. It's not enshrined. Last time I checked in UK law, I don't think it's enshrined that you have to shake everybody's hand that you interact with. I don't think that's a law yet. I mean, I've not checked
it is UK something statutes the football book. Managers in particular really do get very upset by that, isn't it?
Yeah, but he can be upset by it. In this day and age, we seem to have a problem with people not wanting to be upset or offended. You can be upset, you can be offended. Robin's done nothing wrong. He just has to deal. Mr. Robinson has to deal with it and get over it and get over himself.
At Love Sport Radio, if you have a view on that or anything else we are discussing here on the Wimbledon Fan Show, 0208 7020 558 is the number to call. We're going to be looking ahead to Bristol Rovers next.
Giving your team a voice, Love Sport Radio.
You know, obviously he knows how to win these tournaments, but to come back, I think, from where he was a few years ago, it's really brilliant to see for golf in general. And, you know, for all of us as well out on tour, it's nice to have him back.
Francesco Molinari there, speaking about Tiger Woods winning the Masters at Augusta earlier today. I think it's really magnanimous, actually, of Molinari, because he was the overnight leader. It didn't go right for him today. He hit the water not once, but twice. Ended up two shots back on Tiger Woods in a tie for fifth place. Woods becoming a major champion for the 15th time in his career. It was a fantastic sporting drama over the course of the weekend. For those of you who don't like golf, you don't know what you're missing. Nick Draper from the 9 Years podcast is with me in the studio. We're, of course, talking all things Wimbledon between now and 9 o'clock. Next up, Bristol Rovers, who I saw actually battle to a 0-0 draw at Coventry last weekend. Again, they're pretty fortunate actually to come away with a point from. They beat Bradford by 3-2 yesterday. A 93rd minute winner for Bristol Rovers. It's their first win in 6 matches. They have, though, lost only once away from home in the calendar year. There's definitely been an upturn there since Graham Coughlan came in as manager.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we say, I think he's got them safe now, which after a bit of a slump they had, was looking precarious at one point for them. I guess you could argue that for many, many teams in this division, can't you? Yeah, it's one of those games where nothing that they have. I know Johnson Clark Harris has got a few goals this season. Nothing else in their squad really worries me or intimidates me. It's all about us. It's all about what we do. We've just got to be better with the ball than we have been the last couple of weeks. And that's going to be a case of getting over a little bit of nerves, a little bit of tension perhaps because of the situation we're in. So it's a week of it's mentality. It's all about the mental side of it for us, building up this week and just getting our players to relax and be comfortable in the ball and want to take chances and want to take risks. We've got the players. We've Hartigan, Wordsworth, they are players that can take risks and perhaps unlock defences. That's what we're going to need. Either that or we can rely on a few set pieces and hope that James Hansen is ready to win a few headers in the box and get us something. But yeah, it's set up for us as a home team to take the game to them. We've struggled with this at home in the past where expectation has been on us to take it to opposites and teams. We've struggled with that pressure a little bit. So yeah, again, maybe we need to get our psychologist back from a few years ago when we got promoted. Stephen Sylvester, I wonder if he's still around and involved, because he was really helpful for us on the mental side when we got promoted from League Two, and he's come back at various points over the last few seasons. So we need that. Yeah, we need to focus on that side of it because we have got the quality to be all right and to get 3 points on Friday.
Yeah, sorry, I think I've said Saturday as well. Seems really dramatic game at the Memorial Stadium yesterday. Johnson Clark Harris with a dramatic stoppage time winner as Rovers ease their League One relegation fears. The visitors look to have salvaged a point when Nathaniel Knight Percival made it 2-2 in the very last minute of the game. But Clark Harris struck deep into stoppage time. That was his second of the match after Bradford had taken early lead through Lewis O'Brien. That was cancelled out courtesy of goals from Clark Harris and Ollie Clark, the local boy in that Bristol Rovers midfield. Johnson Clark Harris has now scored 11 goals in 11 league starts since his move from Coventry in January. He scored more goals for Bristol Rovers in what, 4 months there, than he did in his entire Coventry City career. Something has just clicked for him.
Yeah, just sometimes it works, doesn't it? You go to a club and it just falls into place for you and it just works, and it seems to be the case for him. Coventry aren't known for scoring lots and lots of goals either, by the way.
So they got five at the weekend.
I was going to say, it's amazing. You look at that. You can't work football out sometimes. Sunderland and Coventry, who are not high scorers by any stretch of the imagination, and then they go nine-goal thriller. But yeah, as I say, yes, he scores goals. I'm not... It doesn't bother me overtly. I'm not too fussed. I think we'll be fine. I do wonder if we need some players with double-barreled surnames, though. Because that seems to be... They seem to score goals, apparently. Like Knight Percival scored yesterday. Clark Harris scored yesterday. So, yeah, maybe that's what we're missing.
Any others, or are there just those two?
I'm sure there are more. Let's just stick with those two for the time being. I'm trying to think if we've got any double-barreled surname players. I don't think we have we? No. That's a problem. We need to sort that out. We need to get on that one.
Yeah, Wally Downs, if you're listening, sign some double-barreled surnames next season. I mean, it's always a fantastic weekend in the Football League when teams are playing on Good Friday and Easter Monday, though, of course, in your case. It is Tuesday night. That's because Luton play Accrington at 5:30 on Saturday. Just looking at some of the fixtures involving the teams around you. Coventry against Bradford. Bradford dead and buried, we feel. Wimbledon against Bristol Rovers. Of course, we've been talking about that in detail. Then you've got Gillingham against Plymouth. Probably both of those just about safe anyway. Rochdale at home to Wickham is a big game for both clubs. Scunthorpe take on Blackpool. It's Walsall against Southend, so two of the teams in the relegation places meeting each other. What's the perfect result for that? A draw?
Yes, I think you'd probably say a draw. I think both of those two teams still go down. The only thing is Southend haven't... I think it's 14 without a win now. So you've got to think they're due one at some point.
It's a strange managerial appointment bringing in Kevin Bond. I mean, his only previous managerial experience, I think, was at Bournemouth, and that didn't go well.
No, that was totally left field. That was a panic thing, wasn't it? Completely panic thing with Chris Powell going. I mean, we hear that Chris Powell had concerns a few months back, actually, about Southend and where their season was going to end up. I think he wasn't happy with perhaps some of his squad and what have you, but I don't know. Like you say, I didn't know who with six games left is going to go in there and do a better job than him. I certainly wouldn't have said Kevin Bond was. So Walsall Southend, they can take points. They can all take points off each other. Let's just get more points off each other. If we could, we've got good fixtures. We have Bristol Rovers at home, Wickham at home, Bradford away on the last day. There's enough there for us not to perhaps have to worry too much about other clubs, but if they can get points off each other, all good.
Yeah, let's look ahead to Easter Monday. Southend at home to Burton Albion. Burton approved with that draw at Sunderland last time out. They are capable of picking up results away from home. It's Bradford against Gillingham. Gillingham may well be safe by then. Bristol Rovers at home to Rochdale. Again, two of the sides down there playing each other. Then you've got Charlton at home to Scunthorpe. You'd expect Charlton to win that. Plymouth host Barnsley. That should be an away win. And Wickham Wanderers against Walsall. So Wickham... their next two games against sides currently occupying the bottom five positions, so they would feel they've got a great chance to get themselves to safety. Then, of course, you play Luton at Kenilworth Road on Tuesday night. Will you be there?
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, yes, yes. Game of the season, biggest game of the season, Luton away. Everyone loves that.
I mean, you mentioned the away following from the weekend. What sort of crowd would they take to Kenilworth Road?
So I believe we've got an initial allocation of 700. We have got in total, I think we could have 1,000 in total by the end of it. I don't know. Moving the game to the Tuesday night is probably going to reduce the numbers we can take, but I still expect us to push close to that 1,000 mark. Yesterday was the highest away turnout we've had all season, 1,301, which is amazing.
What was the atmosphere like there?
Fantastic. It was really, really good, as you'd expect. So we were really packed into their away section. They don't have an away end because they only have one end, as it were. Really, really good atmosphere, really positive atmosphere, despite the fact that we were on the back foot for most of the time. None of the crowd were very supportive, didn't turn on the players whatsoever, which wouldn't have been the case perhaps 6 months ago. But it was also a volunteers' away day yesterday, so it's where the club reward all our volunteers that put in so much work and so much effort for the club. So there's a big turnout of volunteers at the club yesterday, and I saw earlier a statement from the Dons Trust that apparently a few years ago they did an estimate, and that the volunteer workforce at our club, which is incredible, it must be the largest of any club at our level, perhaps in the whole of the Football League, I would imagine, save something in the region of £270,000 a year or something with the work they do, which is an incredible amount of money, incredible amount of work that all our volunteers do. And I think we should we had the day yesterday to recognise them and thank them. I think we should probably maybe do it a little bit more, maybe make it twice a season, I don't know. But yeah, absolutely outstanding for them. And I rewarded with a point yesterday as well.
And just looking at the season as a whole now, I mean, we're entering the home straight. If the worst happens and you do go down, have you seen enough from Wally Down since he came in that he deserves a fair crack of the whip next season, whatever division you're in?
Yes. Simple answer. There's no reason to change it. Wally's very smart football man, knows what he wants, will get what he wants, I feel.
What's his contract situation?
I don't know for certain, but I understand it was to the end of the season, I guess, to be reviewed depending on the job he's done. Now, anyone looking at the job Wally's done, if you don't think he's worth renewing his contract next season, I don't know what you're saying, to be honest with you. I don't think you have any arguments whatsoever that he should be the man that's in charge next season, whichever division we are in, and I expect that will be the case. I guess, with that, the other big news of the week, of course, we've not mentioned, is the fact that officially 100% confirmed is that Erik Samuelsson has now retired. Mm-hmm. Stepped down as the chief executive, and that is with immediate effect. So we expect a replacement to be in place, announced on Wednesday, big Dons Trust meeting at the club at 7:30. We expect the announcement about who's a good replacement to be. But again, we talk about volunteers, and Erik was, for all intents and purposes, he's been a volunteer for the last 17 years and done an outstanding job. So I think we all would thank Erik for everything he's done for the football club. Thank him very much indeed. A very safe pair of hands to guide us through an incredible journey that we've been on these last 17 years. We're very thankful for that. But of course, what that means is that Erik was the man sort of in charge of appointing Wally. Who does it fall on now to make the final decision? Don't know. We'll find out on Wednesday, I guess.
And what sort of appointment would you like to see made there?
Joe Palmer's been brought in as the chief operating officer. He was brought in, I want to say, at the start of last calendar year, so at the start of 2018. I think at the time we all assumed that was with an eye to taking over the role from Erik eventually. Some people suggesting, which might not be a bad idea, that we don't actually need to replace Erik per se. We've got Joe Palmer in there. We've got directors in place already. Mm-hmm. We need to maybe transfer a little bit of power back to the Dons Trust board, who oversee the running of the football club, as it were. And they set the agenda and they do what's needed. And then people like Joe, Ivor, Mick Buckley, who else, David Charles, then take their instruction from them. But as it stands, what we expect and anticipate, and what I'm anticipating, is that Joe Palmer will be announced on Wednesday. And I've dealt with Joe a fair bit as well. Really top guy, really switched on guy, really intelligent guy, very safe pair of hands. Very, very happy if that is what is announced on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think it's a nice way to end the show with a tribute there to Erik Samuelsson. Just give us your quick prediction for the two Easter games.
Luton will probably get staffed like 4-0. Bristol Rovers, no one actually hammers us, to be fair. As poor as we've been, no one's hammered us. So no, Luton will be a tight game. They'll be nervy as well. So, you know, I won't rule out nicking a point maybe there, but realistically, we'll write that off as a defeat. Bristol Rovers, we really do have to win it, I think. So we won 1-0 last season against them. I will take that again this time round.
Great stuff. Nick Draper from the 9 Years podcast, thanks very much for joining us tonight. Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.